The idea of kings and queens today probably brings to mind people like Queen Elizabeth or Prince Charles, maybe William and Harry. They have money, they have royal duties, they have recognition, but they don't really rule. They're more of a symbol. But there was a time when kings and queens ruled the world, when their commands had power and authority. There's a story of one of these powerful kings, an 11th century Danish king named Canute. And he built up his power as he conquered Denmark and Norway and England and Scotland and united them into what's known as the North Sea Empire. And one day, after amassing all this power, he has his throne set down by the sea, and he sat there with his royal court. And after spending some time there, the tide began to rise. And so he shouted out to the sea to halt, but so that his robes wouldn't get wet. But the sea continued to rise. And so he commanded it again to halt. We'll return to King Canute later. But for now, the point is that he's powerful. That his kingship is so powerful that he thought he could sit by the sea and command it to halt. The Gospels were also set in a time where kings and queens ruled, where the word of a monarch was power. In this passage, we'll meet two kings. Pilate himself wasn't a king, but a governor who had to choose between two kings. Between Caesar, the king of Rome, the empire that conquered most of the known world, and Jesus, the king of the Jews, a small and insignificant people group conquered by the Romans. After Jesus' questioning and abuse before Pilate in our earlier passages, we see here in verse 12, Pilate changes his perspective. It says, "From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free. Maybe Jesus won him over with his calmness. Maybe he was convinced that Jesus was innocent. Maybe he felt the Jews were trying to manipulate him, or maybe a combination of all of that. For whatever reason, he was now on Jesus' side. But the Jews force him into a corner. The Jewish leaders kept shouting, 'If you let this man go, you're no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king,'" that's Jesus they're referring to, "'anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar.'" By saying this, the Jews force his loyalty. If he sets Jesus free, then he frees a man that's accused of rebellion against Caesar. And so he's no friend of Caesar. Then the Jews would send word to Caesar of what happened, and the weight of Rome would come down on Pilate as a rebel alongside Jesus. Because Caesar is a king, like King Canute is a king. He's a king with power. But if he kills Jesus, the Jews would be happy because their enemy was dead. And Caesar is happy because a potential rebellion is stopped and Jesus would be dead and then nothing. Because Jesus has no power. He's not a king like King Canute. He's a king that's unlike a king. He's an anti-king. So Pilate has to choose between two kings. But it's really not that hard a choice. Verses 13 and 14, he leads Jesus out, probably bound and bloody from his beatings. And Pilate sits on the judge's seat, the place where the judge presents his judgment. And he says, "This is your king," not in seriousness, but in irony. "He's your king. He's the weak and beaten anti-king." So Pilate chooses Caesar as his king. And now in verses 15 to 16, we turn to the Jews, who have to make a similar decision. The Jews have no love for Caesar. He's just the latest in the long line of conquerors to take over the nation. But because Jesus rocked the boat, because he broke the conventions of the day, because he called God his father, they hated him. Caesar conquered their nation, but Jesus undermined their identity. If the Jews choose Caesar as their king, They can force Pilate's hand and have Jesus legally killed. They can be rid of him because Caesar is the king of the known world. If they choose Jesus as their king, then he's set free and they're nothing because he has the title of the king, but not the power of it. He's an anti-king. So they say, take Jesus and crucify him. And so the Jews choose Caesar as their king as well. They used his power to arrest Jesus, have him illegally trialed in the middle of the night, have him unfairly beaten and flogged, and now to have him crucified. So Jesus is marched outside of the city carrying his own cross. It was normal practice for the crime which someone was to be crucified for to be written and fastened to their cross. So maybe as a parting jab to the Jewish leaders, Pilate writes the penalty notice on Jesus' cross as King of the Jews. And of course the Jews take offense to this and insist that it should be written, he said, I am King of the Jews. But Pilate remained steadfast. It was written in Aramaic, the language of the area, in Latin, the official language of the nation, and in Greek, the common language of the people. So everyone sees the shame of Jesus, the King of the Jews, the weak king, the anti-king, crucified by the powerful king, the King of Rome. So there's a tough question for Christians in this passage. There are two kings, a strong king who has the power of Rome, one who should be feared, and an anti-king who has seemingly no power, who's not king-like at all, beaten and falsely accused and powerless to stop it. We see both Pilate and the Jews choose the obvious choice. They choose Caesar. But the tough question for us is, how can you read this passage and then choose Jesus? We come into church each week and me or someone else up the front tells you to follow Jesus. Choose Jesus as your king. But how could you after reading this passage? You would choose any king but Jesus. The answer lies back in the story of King Canute. From the perspective of a mighty king, the conqueror of the North Sea Empire, who was sitting at the seaside with his royal court, we see pride and confidence in his power. So much that he believed he could halt the sea with his word. But from the perspective of a humble king, we see a different story. He had conquered the North Sea Empire, but he didn't bring his royal court to the seaside to show his power, but his lack of it. So he sits there as the tide rises and commands the sea to halt and not wet his robes, so that everyone in his court would know that he had no power. So the tide rises and he issues his command to halt. And the tide, of course, doesn't stop. And his robes become wet. And as the story goes, he then hung his crown on a cross and he never wore it again. And so, like the story of King Canute can be seen on one side to be the story of pride and on the other side to be the story of humility. So the story of the anti-king from one perspective can be seen as the story of weakness, which we've already seen, but also the story of unconventional power. All throughout the Gospel of John, we've seen a picture of Jesus that is unlike anything we would ever expect. He's a God like and unlike any other God. John, right at the beginning, tells us that he's the Word become flesh. The Word, what's not definable, not containable, took on human form and became defined and contained and touchable and killable. That's an unconventional God, but truly God. Then as a human, he lived unlike any other human. He lived a life against the flow of the culture around him. He healed on Sabbath days. He ate with sinners. He rebuked the highly respected Pharisees. He opened himself up to the disciples, even though he knew one of them would betray him. He's an unconventional human, but truly human. And now in this passage, as a king, it's not surprising that he's unlike any other king. He doesn't say a word. He doesn't throw his power around. He doesn't command and demand. People don't fear him. Yet he's declared king over and over again in the passage. Let's have another look at the passage, but this time from the perspective of the anti-king. Verse 12, Pilate rightly tries to set Jesus free because he's innocent. And the Jews rightly say that anyone who claims to be king opposes Caesar, because you can only have one king. Verses 13 to 14, Pilate sits on the judgment seat, the place where you would declare the final verdict in court cases, at about noon. Jesus was arrested in the dark, in secret, and unfairly tried and beaten. But now in the light of day, the truth comes out. What's Pilate's judgment? He rightly says, "Here is your king." And he speaks more than he knows. In verse 15, the Jews shout out in response that they have no king but Caesar, which is true again. They don't say Jesus is not a king, but that they have no king but Caesar. Even in their rejection, Jesus remains the true king. And so they call out for Jesus to be crucified, an unkingly end, but not unexpected from an unconventional king. From John chapter 12, we know that Jesus came for this very reason. His crucifixion was his glory. And the cross is like his throne. So in verse 16, exactly as his father planned, he was taken to his glory. He was taken to his throne. And in verses 19 to 22, despite the protest of the Jews, it's rightly written that Jesus of Nazareth was the King of the Jews, and people from every language and nation saw it. So without a word, and without a threat, and without a show of power, beaten half to death and then nailed to a cross, the will of the anti-king was done perfectly. Not a word spoken about him was false. Not a thing done was outside of his will. He's an unconventional king. He's the anti-king. But he truly is king. So for us who choose to follow him, we might seem foolish and weak, just like Jesus seems foolish and weak. We say we follow a king who was crucified. We say we follow a king who we can't see. We give up the things that this world will hold tight to. And we act differently to the world around. At least in our best times, that's what we do. But the world laughs at us. It looks at us as though we're weak, as though we're foolish, as though we follow a king who's not a king. But that's just the path of the king that we follow. He's the anti-king. What looks like weakness to Pilate was actually kingship. What looks like defeat to the Jews was actually glory. So don't be surprised that following this anti-king will look like foolishness to the world. What this passage today tells us is that what we believe can look absolutely ridiculous, but can be absolutely true. Each week when we ask you to follow Jesus, or to continue following Jesus, we're asking you to follow the anti-king, a king that rules in a way that looks unkingly. And if you choose to follow him, the path you walk down will seem foolish. Everything we do will seem like the opposite of common sense. But because we follow the king who is the anti-king, we don't need to fear shame and ridicule, but actually embrace it, just like Jesus embraced it. There's no peer-reviewed scientific journals affirming our choice to follow the anti-king. In the eyes of the in the eyes of Pilate, in the eyes of the Jews, in the eyes of the world, we who follow Jesus seem to do what is ridiculous. But in the eyes of the anti-king, who is the true king, this is glory and his will carried out. So when you fear, or when you're laughed at, or when you question your own beliefs, you don't have to deny it. Because from one perspective, it's totally true. Jesus had no power, Jesus is no king. But from the perspective of the anti-king, these things are glorious and they're true and in his control. So you can embrace it wholeheartedly.